Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Growing up in Toronto, comedian, actress, and senior correspondent for The Daily Show, Samantha Bee, had anything but a bland childhood. Stealing cars, living with a free-spirited Wiccan mother, dealing blackjack at an illegal backroom gambling hall. After a tough slog in a kid's variety show, she got her break. Now she sends up elected officials and hapless interviewees for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. She wants you to know critics have called her sweet, adorable, and vicious. This hour, On Point Life and The Daily Show with senior correspondent Samantha Bee. You can join the conversation. What's your question on how The Daily Show comes together? What's your impossible question for Samantha Bee? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Samantha Bee. She's been with The Daily Show since 2003, the longest-serving woman in its ranks, and there's a flap over women in its ranks this week. We'll ask her about that. Her husband, Jason Jones, is also a correspondent at The Daily Show. Her new book is called I Know I Am, But What Are You? Samantha Bee, it's great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a thrill to be here.
Let's go right to the news this week. You work in a living hell of misogyny there. The Daily Show is hell on earth for its women employees. Jezebel.com has got this long piece saying that Jon Stewart off camera is filled with joyless rage?
Joyless rage. And we just got our first ladies' restroom about 2 weeks ago. I'm so grateful for it.
How have you survived this hellhole all these years?
I have no idea how I've come out unscathed. It's just been torture. yes, controversial. It's been a big week for us. It's been tiring.
The women of The Daily Show are firing back with a great big letter of your own in response to Jezebel, signed by, you know, you and all kinds of others, Terry and Jill and Samantha and Allison and Vilma and Lauren and Jocelyn, and right on down to see the photo.
Yes.
It looks like a lot of women here.
Actually, almost 40% of our staff is women. And I guess the genesis of this whole thing was a blog post on Jezebel, which implied some things about our show and the contributions of the women on the show, which people really took offense to. I will say it was hurtful to the women that I work with. I mean, it's slightly different for me because I'm a more public, I've been kind of a public face of the show, female-wise, for many years, and I've answered the question of sexism in the workplace there, I think, quite adequately. I mean, I've continually said that it's been a great place to work and that I've never been, I've never experienced gender bias there on any level whatsoever. You know, Jon Stewart is a great guy. He's always been great to me and to all the women that I work with. But this was really, it was very tiring for the women that I work with who do feel that they make a creative contribution to the show.
What do you make of it, though, then? Because, I mean, they don't just imply. I mean, they go on and on about what a miserable place it is for women. They talk to former employees of The Daily Show.
Well, you know, former employees who left, in the bad way that you can leave a job. Mm. Not former employees who left of their own volition. So there were plenty of people to talk to, not including the people who are currently working there, but who have left, you know, who left under positive circumstances. But I don't know that they actually talked to any of those people.
You address your communal letter to, what is it, to the people who don't work here?
Well, we're very tired of being told what it's like where we work by people who don't work there.
Is this all about Olivia Munn coming on? I mean, for people who don't know, this is she had a video game show she hosted. She's been in, I don't know, Maxim, Playboy, I'm not sure. I mean, she's a hottie, and that seems to have kind of set Jezebel.com off, the idea that they're hiring a hottie.
No, Tom, I don't know if you've ever seen me, but well, I am known for my bodacious curves.
Oh, please stop. Yeah, we know you are. Hey, I've got a little tape on that front. Right, let me play this. Here's an introduction of Olivia Munn to the show.
Sure.
And she's in a segment about the BP oil spill. You, senior correspondent Samantha Bee, couldn't help but interrupt. You walk out on the set in rubber waders, and John Stewart here notices that you're looking a little larger than usual. I guess you're in your seventh or eighth, or I don't know what month of a third pregnancy. Here we go.
Sam, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Are you pregnant again?
Yep, reporting for two.
Jones, get out here!
What's up, Stewie?
Did you get Samantha pregnant again?
No. What are you talking about? Whoa, when did that happen?
About 8 months ago. So.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. It's my third in 2 years.
There you go. Curves on The Daily Show with Samantha
Bee. That's how it feels.
Jason Jones, your husband, who's also a correspondent there and on the set
yes.
as well. Number three, when do you do? Must be soon.
Well, technically in 4 weeks, but honestly, I'm hoping for two. We'll see. The baby will be fully cooked in 2 weeks. So I'm going to do everything I can to send a strong message to this baby to exit my body. I am done.
Let's go, kid. Let's go.
Let's go.
I mean, reading what
Welcome,
we read.
Welcome, stranger.
Right. Come on. Come on down.
Mm-hmm.
Reading what we read in your book, I Know I Am, But What Are You, about your mother. I mean, how do you mm-hmm. think about motherhood? Your mom was really some wild piece of business.
Well, I love her very much, but she is
not saying otherwise.
Non-traditional, let us say. And she really was, you know, my mother's mothering was very definitive in it informs my mothering in the sense that I don't want to do it the same way that she did.
Non-traditional doesn't begin to convey. Give us a sense of your mother's mothering.
Oh, well, my mother was a very freewheeling person. You know, I was born to her when she was still, I mean, she was a teen parent, for one thing. Mm-hmm. She was in high school when I was born. So, you know, she didn't really have a strong sense of the way that these things should be done. And so she was just, I guess freewheeling is the best way to describe it.
Could you get a little more gritty, please? This is not specific enough.
All right, senior
correspondent.
She taught me about sex when I was 7 years old by giving me a glossary of sexual terms that would curl your – it would literally curl your toes if you
okay.
if you opened that book
okay.
and read a single page
okay.
from it, even today. So that was not a benign experience. We had a lot of pornography around the house that was very freely available, and they would she would have dinner parties. And, you know, it was the 70s. It was a different time, but part of what she would do at the end of a dinner party would be to just pop in a porn, and everyone would just kind of sit around and eat dessert, Rice Krispie Squares, what have you.
Yeah,
and it would just sort of be playing,
we're
in, the,
to a
playing
Canadian
in the background.
Childhood. Let's take it straight to the source. Could you read a little bit from us about the man witch? I mean, your mother was a Wiccan or witch or something.
She took you off
to one of these in walks the man witch sort of main guy.
She took me to a coven
okay,
because I was very Catholic and it disturbed her.
Let's hear it.
Okay, so I'll talk about the appearance of the man witch. At about 7 feet tall by 4 feet wide, he materialized in the doorway in his purple crushed velvet robe with a crooked walking stick in one hand and a joint in the other. His body hair was so unkempt and his eyes so wild, he looked vaguely Cujo-like but smelled sweet like sandalwood mixed with pot. From everyone's hushed tones, I could tell he was the big enchilada of the coven. His real name was Robert, but his craft name was Sunthorn. I called him the Man Witch. My mom beamed when she saw him and gave me a little shove toward him. He swiftly entered my personal space and greeted me warmly. I interpreted this to mean that my virgin body was to be sacrificed to Satan momentarily, and so I silently prayed even more fervently to Jesus for protection. I prayed as we all entered the sacred space and found a place to sit on the pentacle made of masking tape. I prayed as they sprinkled grass seeds behind our backs and recited incantations about nature and the spirits in the trees. I prayed as they passed a cup from lip to lip and prayed as I refused to drink from it for fear of the cold sore incantation that was probably swirling around inside. I was not having any part of it. And when they turned off all the lights to celebrate the sacred union of two of the coven's membership in satanic partnership, or so I thought, I prayed hardest of all, tears slipping down my cheeks, as the two lovebirds joyfully ran around our circle, jumping over the broomstick and the cauldron of fire.
Ah,
Just a little moment from the childhood of Samantha.
It was about eight, super Catholic, really into Jesus.
Wow.
I was terrified.
Thanks, Mom. That's great. That's from her book, I Know I Am, But What Are You? You know, it's not fair. When you go out and interview people, they don't know what they're up against. I mean, you are sort of 5'4 and chipper looking, but you've got you've got man-witch in your
backpack. I've got man-witch in me. Yeah, I've got an arsenal. I've got some tools.
I mean,
I've been around.
It must be helpful to you in sort of striking this pose of, you know, coming from another angle entirely that gets people kind of off guard and giving you those crazy interviews.
It is helpful to me because my boundaries aren't so distinct. Maybe that's it.
Is that what got you the job? How did they figure that out at The Daily Show? I mean, you've been there a long time.
I have no idea how they knew that, because for me, the audition process was very, it was not notable in any way for I don't think that my personality shone through at all. I mean, I was terrified. It was, you know, it's so nerve-wracking. So I really don't know why they put their faith in me that I could do this job, but it really is a very bizarre skill set to be able to walk into someone's life and disrupt it terribly.
On camera.
Yeah, and then kind of walk out of their lives. It's a strange thing to be good at.
And amazingly, the whole country, or maybe not, has come to, not the whole country, but
not
a whole,
whole
lot
country.
Of viewers have taken this to their bosom as kind of the new way of news or the new way of understanding what's going on. And I really want to get a sense of that with you as well. Samantha Bee is with us from New York. She is senior correspondent for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Been there since 2003, I think the longest serving woman on the staff. We'll talk more about that in Jon Stewart's Joyless Rage. Are you a Daily Show fan? What do you think of their correspondence reports of senior correspondent Samantha Bee? What's your question on daily life at The Daily Show? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about life and The Daily Show with senior correspondent for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, Samantha Bee. Her new, memoir is I Know I Am, But What Are You? Very funny telling of her very unique early days, mom, man, witch, and all the rest. Here's a bit from Samantha Bee's very first appearance on The Daily Show. This is back in July of 2003. Jon Stewart asks about the exaggerated, it turns out, claims that the Bush administration made about Saddam Hussein's efforts to buy enriched uranium, and Samantha tries to brush by it.
Well, John, if it turns out that instead of Saddam Hussein trying to buy uranium for nuclear weapons, Saddam Hussein was not trying to buy uranium for nuclear weapons, I mean, that's a one-word difference in a long, long sentence.
But Samantha, that one word changes everything. It reflects on the administration's credibility. There are reports now that some Bush officials knew that the information was false before the State of the Union address.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
There it is. In a nutshell, that is it. Samantha Bee in 2003, and she's still at it. Lots of callers here, Samantha. Simsbury, Connecticut. Elaine, you're on the air with Samantha Bee.
Hi, Samantha and Tom.
Hi, Elaine.
Sam, you are my favorite correspondent.
Oh, I love compliments.
I think I've been watching since you've been on the show. We were living in South Carolina at the time. It was the only thing that kept my sanity during the Bush years.
Oh, thank you. Bless you.
We've since been back to Connecticut where it's not as red.
To say the least. So what do you think? What's your question for Samantha, Elaine?
Well, I was wondering how much of Jon Stewart's stuff is scripted versus sort of ad lib or riffing or whatever you want
to
call it.
Maybe Jon's and your own, Samantha.
Well, it is what you see on the show, not including the field pieces, is quite scripted. You know, he very much has his own way of delivering it, and then he goes off of script from time to time, as is his wont. Mm-hmm. But the thing that most people don't really know is that, I mean, we have a script kind of in place by about 4 o'clock, and at 4 or 4:30, that's when the whole show is run down. We have a full rehearsal, and then between about 4:30 and 6, when the show tapes, basically the whole show is rewritten.
on the basis of what? Editors, audience, how it feels at the moment.
Just how it feels in the moment. Mm-hmm. And John likes to, you know, he likes to make changes. He likes to, he gets new ideas on the spot. I mean, he's so brilliant and is brimming with so many ideas that often I think, you know, I mean, I don't want to speak for him, but I think sometimes just sort of living with the ideas all day and having seen some, you know, and having created the jokes and having seen them and being familiar with them, he sort of gets bored with them.
It's so
on
deeply,
some level.
Yeah,
and then wants
by the
to
time the,
it
by
and,
the time it's showtime, he's already to move on.
It's so, yeah, I think so.
You know, it's so deeply steeped in the news. You guys must be complete news junkies, or somebody there is reading things and looking at video more deeply than I can almost imagine.
Sure. I mean, we have an incredible – I mean, the staff behind the scenes is absolutely incredible. There's just news available and on all the time. And certainly there are great minds behind the scenes sorting through everything. And you know, John is, of course – you know, a great mind who's just completely immersed.
He brings a lot of humor to it. He also brings a fair amount of passion to it. What about the joyless rage comment in Jezebel.com? In the course of the day, watching the news of this grim world, is he in a joyless rage looking for the silver lining of humor or whatever?
I can't say that I've really had that experience of him. I mean, listen, comedy is serious business. I mean, everybody knows that. It's a very challenging job. And you're meeting deadlines and, you know, making things funny, it can be very arduous. But, you know, he has an incredible passion for it and he's amazing at it. And I would not describe him in that way personally. I think he's incredibly dedicated, but he's also a very joyful person and fun to have around the office. And he knows all the interns' names. Like, you know, he's just one of those people who makes a point of being very sociable and avuncular, I would say. So I have to take issue with that.
Sociable and avuncular versus joyless rage. Of course, it's not all just
versus
funny he's looking for. I mean, he really picks up stuff that people are or should be, if they understood it or knew what was going on, pretty upset about. I mean,
sure.
And he conveys that as well, I guess.
I do think that we have a very interesting way of distilling the news on our show. And it's always pleasing as a person who works there, but is not, you know, I'm not obviously involved in every moment of every day or anything like that. So many times I just sit back and get to watch the show as a regular viewer, not having had anything to do with any of the material that's on that night. And I'm often surprised by it and titillated by it, just like anyone.
Let's get a call from Utah, Murray, Utah, and Gary. Gary, you're on with Samantha Bee.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
And Samantha.
Hi.
To talk to you.
Nice to talk
to you. Samantha, just on a personal note, please don't let your husband come on the show without any pants on again.
I know.
What?
Oh, he is terrible.
My question was... you know, I love the show. I watch it all the time. And I just find it incredible that your interviewees seem so naive to the type of interview this is going to be. How do you get people that aren't aware of how these interviews typically run and catch people off guard?
Well, you would be very surprised by, I mean, the process. We don't hide where we're coming from with people. They have a lot of advance warning. They know that we're a show on Comedy Central. They know the name of the show. And really, with all of that information in their arsenal, you would think that people would look us up and be interested, you know, in what we do, in our process. But oftentimes people don't take that extra step, or they don't take the time to investigate who they're going to be speaking to, or they simply don't care, or they do take the time and don't care because they feel like they have a message that they want to get out. And, you know, it's surprising to think that, you know, as much as we are using people, they are also in the process of using us because they have an agenda that they want to speak to. And
you've got an audience.
and we've got an audience that we want to speak to, and they often really have a very strong agenda that they think is really important, and they want to make their points. Mm. So
they do, maybe even through the humiliation you may bring their way one way or another.
Well, exactly. And it's difficult to anticipate how the interview is going to go. They're sort of surreal, and I don't think people are often well prepared for that.
Gary in Murray, Utah, thanks for calling. I want to bring in a big journalism voice here for mm-hmm. just a moment, because you guys are in the humor circle, but you are increasingly in the news circle as well. Jay Rosen joins us from New York, professor of journalism at New York University, writes the blog Press Think, which covers new media, future of the press, citizen journalism. He's author of What Are Journalists For? Jay Rosen, welcome back to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Samantha's here as well. I have no doubt you catch The Daily Show now and then. You've been on it. What is this, yes, Jay? Is this comedy? Is this the news? Is this journalism?
Well, it's definitely comedy. I don't call it journalism, but I do call it press criticism. And I think one of the reasons they've been so successful at it is that there's a lot of things in politics and public life that people in the news business have to take seriously that can't be taken seriously. And that is the opening for The Daily Show.
To just put the dismay right out there.
Yeah. And also, I think, to adjust to our experience. I mean, in this way that television, especially network television and cable, is kind of pitched to what the producers imagine as the average viewer, and that certainly makes sense. But there's a lot of extremely informed viewers watching it, too,
mm-hmm.
and people who can compare news across sources. And to those people, the production of TV news might actually say something completely different than what the producers intended to be. And that, I think, is the heart of the Daily Show audience. It's not necessarily hyper-informed people, but people who are pretty informed and pretty jaundiced and cynical about a lot of things that go on in this country. And they've managed to turn comedy into criticism in an extremely effective way, and I think they deserve a lot of credit for that.
There's that opening where, you know, you hear something, maybe from an official source, it sounds a little crazy. Maybe a straight journalist has to nod or ask the next kind of logical mm-hmm. question. But here's a little bit just last night, Samantha, Jay. This was Jon Stewart reacting to an interview with NASA director. This is Charles Bolden on Al Jazeera TV. And Bolden says in this interview that before he got the job, President Obama gave him three goals. This is for the head of NASA. One, get kids interested in science and math. Two, expand international relationships. And three, find a way to reach out to the Muslim world. This is for the head of NASA. Here's Jon Stewart last night.
Wow. I guess they are using the space program not only for space exploration, but I guess a bunch of other that. But what an innocuous and bland statement of broad PR goals. It'd be like the lamest Star Trek episode ever. Captain's log, Stardate 5836.4. Reading book about hummus to Iraqi children.
Jon Stewart last night. Okay, that's funny. But then explain this, Samantha and Jay. Here's a web comment. It just comes in from Steve. And he says, I'm 28. I watch Jon Stewart almost every night. Most days I think Stewart, along with Colbert and others, are the only ones actually telling the truth. And they're doing it through satire. Satire can be such a powerful, often prophetic tool for social change. Stewart, Colbert, and correspondents like Samantha Bee are inspiring change. Not just laughter, Samantha, but, I mean, you're being given a lot of credit. Truth and change on your doorstep.
Well, come on now. I think that seems a little reaching. But I do think that one of the major advantages that we have is that we're not really tethered to to access. We don't have access to anybody. So we can kind of go off script a little bit, and it's a little easier for us because, you know, we can always, the repercussions are just not there for us. So we can say what we want to say to people. You know, we interview very interesting people in our field pieces, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, I did a whole thing with the head of the census, and he just had to, it was terrible for him. him, but, you know,
you
any
said you
other
were very suspicious
couldn't.
Of people with mustaches, let alone census takers at your doorstep. He has
no
a mustache.
No other person. Yeah. Nobody in the legitimate media can say that to him. You know what I mean? I mean, we get to do things. We get to play around. And, you know, if some truth comes out of that, that's very nice. But ultimately, I would say that the main goal of our show is to make the best joke.
Jay, when I got into journalism a couple of years back, I mean, truth and change, that's kind of what I thought journalism was all about. And here you hear our listener who watches The Daily Show practically every day, and he looks to The Daily Show for truth and change. As a professor of journalism, what do you make of that, Jay?
Well, I think the change part is a little over the top, and I certainly wouldn't look to The Daily Show for reforming our society, and I don't think the people who produce it think that's what they're doing either.
No.
But the reason that truth is closer to the heart of what it's doing is that, and Samantha mentioned that they don't have to worry about their future legitimacy as news providers. And what the news providers are doing often is not telling us everything they could, because they're concerned about their future legitimacy with sources, audiences, potential critics.
But shouldn't a news organization's legitimacy be tied to telling you everything they can? Isn't that the whole point of journalism?
This is exactly the problem in journalism today, is that the two things are coming into conflict, and the mainstream media has not been able to resolve that conflict. And that is why The Daily Show, to a growing audience, seems more truthful, because they don't have this extra agenda of proving their legitimacy, proving their innocence, proving their balance again and again to get in the way. And on the other hand, it's almost an ancient dynamic as well. Satire is able to communicate some truths that other forms of writing and speaking cannot do. That's been true since Thomas Swift.
Here's another bit where Jon Stewart goes after the mainstream media, in this case CNN, Anderson Cooper, Wolf Blitzer, for not sort of taking things all the way to their obvious logical conclusion. They're not pursuing that to the bottom line. He's making fun of the many times that they say on CNN, we'll have to leave it there.
We have to leave it there, gentlemen.
We'll leave it there.
We'll leave it there.
We'll leave it there, gentlemen.
We're going to have to leave it there.
All right. Well, we got to leave it there.
We're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid.
We'll have to leave it, that part of the conversation there.
It's the drug companies that are funding the president's campaign in favor of health reform.
We're not going to get into that right
but,
now.
But know,
we, Karen, hold your thought, because we got to leave it there. We're out of time.
God! You have 24 hours in a day! How much more time do you need? Well, I guess it explains CNN's new slogan. CNN, nobody leaves more things there. Now, I know it's hard.
We'll have to leave it there. Not good enough for Jon Stewart and The Daily Show, Samantha.
Just where the conversation should be starting, let's leave it at that. Please, let's not go there.
Gee, I guess that's the point, in a way. That's what attracts people. It's they do go on.
I think that's one of the most effective pieces of media criticism I've seen, and that is exactly CNN's problem, is that they simply go on to the next thing, and they're not only leaving the discussion there, they're leaving the viewers adrift. And over time, people sense that, and it affects their notion of who is trustworthy. And I think what people mean when they say they get their news from Stewart is not so much that so much information comes to them by watching the show. It's that their feeling is, this is somebody who will tell me the truth. And it's really kind of remarkable that conviction doesn't attach to news figures the way it once did, because of some change in them and the surrounding culture. And this is what people in the news business, I think, especially television news, haven't puzzled through yet. They have not figured that out.
Doesn't seem that tough. Seems tragic to me. They better figure it out and fast. We're trying to right here. Jay Rosen, you are great. It's always great to have you. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about life and The Daily Show with senior correspondent for the show, Samantha Bee. She's out with a new memoir, I Know I Am, But What Are You? A very funny book about a very unusual coming up. She joins us from New York. Here's a bit from the morning after the recent primaries where Carly Fiorina and Meg Whitman fared well in state primaries. John Stewart checked in with Samantha Bee, remember, 8 months pregnant, to get her opinion on women's success on primary night.
So you're...
Come on.
You're actually not that excited about this.
No, it's fine, honey. We'll do it. You go back to sleep. We were getting bored just holding down full-time jobs and raising our kids anyway, being 8 months pregnant because our husband can't stay on his side of the bed.
Samantha Bee with a little political analysis. Connor in Somerville, Massachusetts. You're on the air with Samantha Bee.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I think both Jay and Samantha are being a bit too dismissive about The Daily Show affecting change. And to give an example, you know, this past year we saw Jim Cramer come on the show through an interview with Jon Stewart, a pretty tough interview.
Who went after him for his Wall Street calls and euphoria before the crash and all that, yeah.
Exactly. And the next day on his show, huge audience, huge public figure, he was changing his tone completely. Did a big apology, said he was going to change the format of his show. I mean, this was a big deal, and this wasn't an isolated instance. I really do think that the show does affect change. I mean, maybe not on a global scale, but you can't dismiss things like that.
Come on, Samantha.
He's back at it. He's back at it, though. He's back at the old. He's gone back to the old ways, though. I mean, I see what you're saying. I don't want to minimize that, but but on the other hand, we are a comedy show first and foremost. So if we had that in our minds during the day, you know, I mean, the show has a very relentless pace. If you woke up in the morning and you thought, today I'm going to affect change, you couldn't possibly make a successful comedy show. I mean, everything would become, the gravitas would overwhelm you. For example, I'm speaking to someone tomorrow. I'm doing an interview with someone tomorrow who has some very outlandish views on things, if I may say. And, you know, I'm approaching
Can you whisper the subject to us?
He might be a racist.
Okay, he might be a racist. Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Okay, just saying.
Yeah. And, you know, I have to fully approach that interview in the spirit of comedy. I mean, I'm learning a lot about him, and I have to go in there with my own agenda for certain. But first and foremost, I'm trying to figure out what the best jokes will be with him. And I think that that is what our world is like. If something great comes out of it, that is so wonderful and incredibly satisfying. But ultimately, it really always has to be a comedy show first and foremost. Right. It would be terrible for us to say, we are changing the world.
No, I get that. I get that you can't walk around in long robes as self-righteous change agents. But there's definitely a righteous indignation at work in here.
Sure. Of course, and it is very satisfying for people. It's very satisfying for me when I watch the show, and John makes a great point about something in a way that I never thought about it before. I mean, this is why I was a fan of the show before I arrived at the show, and why I continue to be a fan of the show even though I work there, which is, you know, not typical. Usually, if you work at a show, you hate the show and you don't want to watch it. But I love it.
Clarksville, Tennessee. Still, Clarksville, Tennessee. Greg, you're on with Samantha Bee.
Hey, great. I love The Daily Show. I'm in the Army, and most of us really, really love it because when you watch the news, and, you know, it's a lot of political, you know, they have to be real sensitive about what they say, just like the CNN bit where, you know, we'll leave it there, where you guys are like the little kid who calls the person fat in the grocery store. You know, you have to worry about it's great. You know, you listen to it. It's real funny. And we in the military, as recent past shows, you really can't say anything political without getting in a little bit of trouble. So it's a great outlet, and we appreciate it. So thanks a lot.
Release for the man
you.
In military.
That's
the men,
wonderful.
Greg, and women. Greg, thank you. Oh, there you go, Samantha.
Oh, that's very high praise indeed.
The troops.
That's very high praise indeed.
Troops lining up for you. Potsdam, New York. Don, you're on with Samantha Bee.
Oh, you made my day.
Hello,
Samantha. I can't tell you. I've been listening to you on here, waiting, and I teach comedy.
Oh, you do?
And the basis of comedy is truth, and that's why the Daily Show is so good. It's the only news I listen to except for NPR.
Ah, and, very nice.
And you are the ultimate of yin and yang.
Is she yin or yang? Who's the yang here?
Yeah,
who's
which
the
one
yin
am I?
What?
Well, when your eyes bore into your interviewer and you dominate them, and you look sexy when you're 12 months pregnant, what can I
tell you? Oh, bless your heart. Bless your heart for that, because I got to tell you.
I've been watching The Daily Show since Craig Claiborne was on, so that'll give you an idea how old I am. And I agree that Jon Stewart has changed the whole format of it. But, but now I only watch to see if you're going to be on or if my old friend Louis Black is going to be on.
Oh.
And give John this message for me. He may go off script, but he never goes off stick.
There. That's nice. I will pass that along.
But is that nice? Or is it a compliment, Don, or not?
No, it isn't. I think he's falling back on predictability, and that's never good in comedy.
What do you mean as a teacher of comedy? What's the predictability factor you're seeing here?
Oh, I can tell when he's going to mop his brow with his tie. I can tell when he's going to laugh more than he should with an interview.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe people like that or they don't like it. I mean, there's something about you kind of know what he's going to do, but maybe that's what people wait for.
As I said, if the structure of the show is comedy with truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we should be constantly surprised. And I got to tell you, I wait for Colbert because Colbert doesn't do that for me.
That's so interesting. I thought that you were saying that you enjoyed that, but I see that you're saying that you don't enjoy that. But I mean, is it that do you just feel like you're too familiar with it now? You're just too familiar with him?
No, I think he's just falling back on shtick too much.
But doesn't Colbert have more shtick than Stewart? I mean, to my layman's eye, Colbert's got more of a put-on persona anyway. At least I think.
But he constantly surprises. And that's what comedy is about.
You and John need to take separate vacations and rekindle your romance in a different way. You know, just take a little break and then come back to us, and I think you'll be refreshed.
Donna, I'm grateful for your call. Watch out for the joyless rage. Kate in Farmington, Connecticut, you're on with Samantha Bee.
Hi, Samantha and Tom. How are
you?
Hi.
I'm good.
I have to say, congratulations on your baby. And,
thank you.
Number three?
Yes.
Yes.
Well,
crazy
I have five
town.
Boys, so good luck.
Oh, gosh.
And I have to say, I wanted to just say that my profound, I'm just such a fan of The Daily Show, and it does inform my parenting, actually, because my value system is so, you know, near and dear to me, and I believe that The Daily Show sort of reflects that value system, and my 10-year-old is such a fan that I'm probably inappropriately letting him watch certain things, but he actually identified John Oliver at a soccer game recently that he was in Connecticut for. So,
I
want to just compliment all of you. It's amazing what you do, but I agree with the other caller that the truth and the legitimacy to what you do is beyond just comedy. And I know every single interview I've ever heard you and any of the people that work there, you always say it's about the being funny part. But I have to believe that there's something more to it, that there's something driving all of you that's deeper than, not to say comedy isn't deep, but that's deeper than that, that maybe informs your value system or helps you to, drive the stories.
Oh, of course. I mean, there's no question. I mean, we all have, you know, we all have points of views and passions about certain subjects, and the closer we can get in a piece to you know, obviously, again, first and foremost, be funny, but also it's so satisfying when the two things converge, when you can be funny and make a joke about something, but also demonstrate your passion for a subject. When those two things combine, it's such an exciting experience and such an incredible catharsis. I do experience that in particular at the conventions and during election season, of course. I mean, that is when our show is really in full gear, and it can be a wonderful experience.
You
had that
famous bit where you went around the Republican convention in Minneapolis trying to get Republicans to use the word choice when Sarah Palin's family had the whole pregnancy going on.
Oh my goodness gracious! I mean, reproductive rights are something that I feel very, very passionately about as a feminist and a woman, and so getting the satisfaction of just hearing someone finally say the word choice, I mean, it was so monumental for me. I watched the show in studio with the whole audience, and everyone was so quiet during the whole piece. It was very tense in the audience because no one knew where it was going.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew where it was going, but I didn't know how people were going to respond to it because it spoke so personally to me. And people just exploded. It was a catharsis for a lot of people, and that was so satisfying to me, I can't even tell you. So, yes, I mean, jokes first, but if you get to do something with that joke, it's just the best feeling, really.
Well, it's interesting. Your mom left you with a porno. Kate leaves her 10-year-old with The Daily Show. Everybody brings
That's a much better choice. Much better choice.
Nashville, Tennessee. Wade, you're on with Samantha Bee.
Hi, great. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hi.
Sam and everybody at The Daily Show, I'm just wondering, whenever I watch The Daily Show every day, and I love the things that you guys are doing there, and I really do think that you're a force in the media. But I'm wondering, as the show is obviously having a slight liberal bias on the
slight?
Number of topics, I'm wondering, how do you balance the conservative viewpoints whenever they seem to be performing, whenever they seem to be looking for the right thing and the liberal, but how do you take one with the other and not try to lean too far to one side, or is that even a consideration?
Great
well,
way.
I think that John, tries very hard, and he really is the editorial voice of our show, and I think that he works very diligently to try and straddle the middle ground and kind of shine a light on whoever seems to be messing up the most, which can go either way on a given day. I mean, really, he criticized Obama pretty strenuously in the last little while, which has been very surprising and shocking to people. But
about what? Like what? Do you remember offhand?
The Gulf oil spill and things, things of that nature.
Clean it up, Mr. President. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's been shocking to some of our viewership that he would do that. But, he really isn't entrenched on one side or the other particularly as I know him as a person. So I would say that he's more willing to shine the light wherever he feels like it. He wants to shine it. It's not really a liberal or conservative thing.
I can picture shaking their head and saying, I just don't buy that, Samantha.
Well, stop doing what you're doing in the way that you're doing it, and you won't have the light shine on you.
There you go. There's wisdom from on high.
There you go.
Let's get another from thank you, Wade. Another in Nashville. Kathy, you're on, Kathy.
Hi. I'll be quick with this because I know you're running out of time, but something that has fascinated me from the very beginning is what type of archive system you must have to
pull
out
all
of those bits of video, and especially if you're changing the show, a half hour before you go on. I think that one of the most impressive things that you do is to be able to pull those things together and let us see sort of the ridiculous aspect of what some of the newscasters are doing.
That is a great question. How do you do that? You call people to account by putting what they said today up against what they said, 6 years ago, and you do it seemingly in a half second.
Well, I have to say that it takes a little longer than a half second, for sure. But we do, and I have give all this credit to the people that we work with. I mean, there are people at work who have minds like steel traps. I'm not kidding you. They have perfect recall for things that happened 5 years ago. These are unusual people with an amazing skill set. And I count, and John is among those people. I mean, they just have an incredible memory. We have a great archiving system, and there are tools for searching for things in a certain way that make it possible for you to pull up things very quickly and access them very quickly. But I would say that the genius of it is in people's people's minds. I mean, they really have incredible. There's a fellow that we work with. His name is Adam Chodakoff, and you can ask him anything. I mean, you can ask him anything about what has happened in the last 15 years, culturally, politically, and he will tell you. And if he can't tell you in the instant, he will look it up and find out within 2 minutes. I mean, you know, he's unbelievable.
We can see it at work. We've just got a little time left. We're just interested about your plans, Big Mama B.
Yes.
You've had Steve Carell go off into movies and Colbert go off with his own show. There you are, the woman at that living hell for women.
It's been so trying.
So do you go the long distance with this? Do you get road weary as the senior correspondent at The Daily Show?
You know, it's difficult to get tired of a job that you love so much. I mean, I adore my job. It's hard for me to imagine because I have such a specific and strange skill set. It's hard to imagine where you go after this. I'm sure that there will be an after. I don't know when that will take place. Hopefully not too soon. I don't really know where the future is going to take me, but in the meantime, I'm so, so very happy where I am.
Well, good luck with baby number 3. Thanks for the book. It's really, really funny and really interesting.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We loved our time with you today, Samantha. Thanks a lot.
This was a great pleasure. Thank you.
Samantha Bee, senior correspondent for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Her husband, Jason Jones, is also a correspondent on The Daily Show. You may have seen him there. Listeners, thanks for joining us. You can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Sam Gale-Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, James Ross, Marika Spence, and John Wibby. With help from Britt Hansen and Evelyn Radigan, our senior producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.